When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Hockey at the Rock. It has been a while, but finally, hockey's on the horizon. Camp has started. We're seeing some good things. My name is Dan Rozelle, and I'm joined by John Fisher, as always. Hello, John.
Hello, Dan. It may be raining here in New Jersey, but the sun is shining for hockey is soon.
I'm very excited about this. This has been a very, very long summer. With not much to cheer for in the New York area, you know, when it comes to either baseball team, tough start for both football teams so far. Finally, there's something to look forward to, and I very much look forward to this team after an offseason that you can only describe as successful.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the New Jersey Devils avoided a lot of the dramatic issues. You know, they still have an AHL affiliate. Carolina can't say that. Mm-hmm. Nobody
still have a coach. Columbus can't really say that.
Nope, they can't say that. All the Devils did since our last episode is they signed Cal Foote. They signed Nolan's brother.
Mm-hmm.
He's depth. He's not that great. He's basically 24-year-old. Hey, if you need a guy in the lineup who could take a lot of penalties who's not named Brendan Smith, there's your guy.
Well, they just decided to be the team of brotherhood. That's all they really want to do.
Yeah, Lou also did that. So, you know.
Well, it kind of worked, right?
It depends. I mean, in the sense of success on the ice, absolutely. In terms of the success from the brothers, there's the Giantas.
Mm-hmm. Niedermeyers.
Yeah, but they never played at the same time, though, Dan.
That's true. That was the tragedy.
That did not work. The Zajac, I guess, were depth.
We got the Mercers in camp this time.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Prospect Challenge happened. They went 1-2-0. Who cares about the results? But Riley Mercer was the best goaltender out of the three, which is a bit of a concern if you're Tyler Brennan or Isaac Poulter, who's fighting for minutes in Utica already.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we also missed the very important signing, the return of Mr. Emoji himself, the ex-blocker, the Twitter blocker, Mr. Rebus himself, Keith Kincaid, 34 years young. Back in the organization, not playing for Utica, for he signed an AHL deal with the Chicago Wolves, and therefore will be loaned out there. But he is on the books for league minimum salary. This is now, he's back with the Devils after stints with Montreal, our hated rivals, Boston, and Colorado within the last four seasons, Dan.
Hmm. Quite a journey for him.
Yeah, he never played for Columbus after that trade in 2019.
Right. Well, I mean, listen, again, it's not really consequential, we would hope, with the tandem the Devils are going to be moving forward with. It seems like it's going to be Vanecek, Schmid the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
No reason to really doubt that. So insurance with NHL experience, sure, why not?
Yeah, better him than Eric Karlgren. I will say that Kincaid has been playing better statistically than Eric Karlgren. But yeah, the number three option until Nico Daws gets back is still dicey. So don't hope for any injuries in the net. That's basically all it is. And the only other move of note is one PTO for the Devils, which is notable since Carolina has seven. Max Willman. You've seen him play. You don't remember him because he didn't do anything. He played nine games for the Flyers last season.
Okay.
He's a Boston University grad. He's basically been on the come up through Lee Valley, which is the Philadelphia organization. 41 games two seasons ago with 6 points, nine games last season and no points. He's there just to fill a veteran spot for presumably the split squad game that will start preseason tomorrow, Monday, September 25th.
How Fitzgerald to sign a Boston University guy?
I misread
this. It's so obvious.
Actually, I actually misspoke. He played four seasons for Brown University.
Oh,
still. And then transferred to Boston.
Okay, there you go.
So he is a BU guy, but only for 1 year. I read his stat line a little too quickly and just realized, oh, that says Brown. which good for Willman. It means he's smart. That's an Ivy League school.
Yeah.
You know, good for him. You know, he'll probably get a good job when the hockey ends. But yeah, he's just there to fill out the roster. The Devils have 57 men in camp, and 43 of them are eligible to play in New Jersey right now. And the spots to figure out who the 23 are mostly are just figured out, mostly are decided. But there are some battles of note in camp.
And someone who's shown up looking pretty prepared by all accounts for these battles is Alex Holt. He's getting a lot of opportunity to skate with main roster guys. It's not going to be a situation where he's up with the team, but he's playing on the fourth line because he just hasn't beaten out anyone on that first, you know, first two offensive lines that they have. But this year he's getting every opportunity and it looks like he's doing pretty well.
Yeah, the next 2 weeks are very critical for Holtz and also Graham Clark. Let's see, who else has a lot to prove in a very
maybe
short amount
Nemitz?
Of time? Nolan Foote. Nemitz, Nemitz kind of does because his contract can slide, so the Devils can wait on him another season. Santeri Hataka, who is one of the players acquired in the Timo Meier trade, he didn't play at all for the Devils or the Comets last season due to injury. He's in the final year of his ELC. He actually has some NHL experience, a brief NHL time with San Jose, so he's itching for minutes. Cal Foote, who the Devils signed, is in the final year of his contract. You know, there are some guys who, even if the end goal is being the 13th forward or the 8th defenseman, that would be a win for them because they're playing for contracts at this point. And but for Holtz, even though he has another year left on his deal, you know, he's a top 10 draft pick. The expectation is you got to show that you're an offensive contributor. Well, you got to show that you can also contribute off the puck. So the next 2 weeks is going to be critical for Holtz, not just to, you know, bang in a goal here or there, but also can he play well on defense? Can he back check? Can he not take a penalty? You know, things like that. So he can demonstrate that he deserves to be in New Jersey much more than Utica.
Yeah, I mean, it's about time. It's really, if this is your opportunity to break through and be part of, I mean, again, if he comes through and he is what he's supposed to be, based on his draft stock, that just gives them a weapon that they didn't have last year to an offense that's already more potent with the things like the Toffoli trade that happened. It's just so much to think about in terms of, I mean, it's a good problem to have. Where does he go in the lineup rather than can he crack the lineup is good.
It is. And it's also critical for the Devils. And that's going to be more of the case for Lindy Ruff and his staff to figure out over the next 2 weeks is who should play with who. Because over the last season, I think, and even the previous seasons, Dan, I think we could say that Ruff, both as a criticism and as a compliment, he's not married to his lineups. Like, if he knows a line isn't working or a pairing isn't working, he will make that change.
Well, people unless they browse about 13 straight games, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, but for the purposes of a season, an 82-game season, you're going to have bad nights, you're going to have injuries, you're going to have guys, you're going to have matchup issues. So it's valuable to know now, over the next 2 weeks in preseason, who can play well with who. The fact that most of this roster is returning from last season is helpful because you already have a sense of that. But you can also sit there and say, do we really need to see Eric Halla play half a season with Jack Hughes? Probably not. You know, you can see if Andrej Palat would be a better fit, or Holtz or someone else. And that's going to be the intent of this preseason from a New Jersey perspective. Whereas most of the battles, like the aforementioned Holtz, Foote, Clark, it's going to be more about, you know, where do you step, you know, are you going to be in New Jersey? Are you going to be the first call up? Are you going to crack the roster as an extra? Because I'm working on the assumption that Curtis Lazar, Thomas Noshek, McLeod, Bastian, they're all on the roster. Like, they're not going to not make New Jersey.
Right.
So, you know, it's going to be a little tougher for the younger guys to break through and also to have that message of, or at least get the message in preseason that if you do well in Utica, we will see you in New Jersey at some point. You know, it's not like you're going to be blocked out all year.
Yeah, and who knows what kind of injuries might happen. You'd never, you know, want to think about that when you're constructing a lineup, but you can't help but do that. It's good to know that there's depth waiting in the lower levels for them. So, again, we'll see how things shake out over the next couple of weeks. The preseason schedule is out. So, John, do you want to let us know when they're playing?
Okay, so, fun fact. The NHL decided to redesign their website and all the teams decided to redesign their websites along with that. So, you know, update your bookmarks as accordingly. Nevertheless, tomorrow, the 25th, is a split squad game, meaning half the roster is going to Montreal Half of them will stay in New Jersey to play Philadelphia. Both games are at 7. There's no television coverage, at least locally here. It's thought that there's going to be a stream that has yet to be confirmed for the Devils Flyers game. Montreal, we'll see if Montreal streams it or if it's on TSN or RDS up there. But after that, you get some television coverage for the other games. You get the Devils going to our hated rivals in game 2 on September 28th. That's a Thursday. That's going to be on MSG and MSGSN. So cover your ears as you get to endure what is likely going to be a joint broadcast. So you get to hear Danico and Joe Micheletti at the same time, presumably awesome. With Sam Rosen. That's my opinion about that.
My favorite.
Yeah. Anyway, September 30th, Saturday, the Devils will be in Philadelphia. That's already listed as being on NBC SP, which is South Philly. So at least if you're in that area, there is coverage. Not sure if there's going to be a stream for that. Then in the second week, the tune-up week, as I like to call it, the Devils are going to be more local. They're going to host the Islanders. That's going to be on MSG and MSGSN. So again, if you're watching this on TV, again, expect Butchie and Dano sharing stories from the 80s.
You know, yeah, Dano, but Brendan like, Burke, though.
Oh, with, well, Brendan Burke's better than Sam Rosen.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but you can expect the number of stories from the 80s is going to be very, very high. You know, oh, you know, I broke into the league while you guys were winning cups. Yeah, it was great time winning cups. Loved it. That's probably going to be the tenor of it. Anywho, October 4th on Wednesday, the Devils will be hosting our hated rivals. This is also going to be on the NHL Network in addition to MSG and MSGSN. And the preseason finale will be Friday, October 6th. Devils at Islanders. That will be presumably last chances for some of the guys who are going to still be on the roster for that game. And for the guys who are set to be NHL players, it's going to be their final tune-up game before the regular season starts with a back-to-back on October 12th, Thursday night, Devils hosting Detroit, ESPN and Hulu.
Man, it can't come soon enough. Truly, yep. Truly, it cannot come soon enough.
No, we're already in the low, high teens, I should say, before the season starts.
Mm-hmm. We're Palat days away.
We're Palat days away as of this recording. But the point is that when you look at that schedule, there really isn't like a natural time period to say here's where you think cuts are going to happen, because after the split squad game, the games are every other day.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be surprised if you see what you saw from previous seasons where it's going to be like a set of drips. You know, a couple guys get cut here, a couple guys get cut there. There's not going to be a massive 20 guys getting cut on one day. You know, and don't be surprised if waiver rules require some paper moves to happen. That's exactly what happened last season with Simon Nemitz, who was on the roster for a hot second. But that was just for compliance purposes. The Devils are not over the cap. They are nowhere near the 50 contract limit. So they may not need to do a paper move outside of just, you know, hiding somebody from waivers.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. I mean, to have this kind of team and still have flexibility to do things in season if you need to, that's just a huge win. It's just, this is the culmination of the process. Again, like the expectations, we all know they're there. The team knows they're there. They seem to acknowledge them constantly. So it's time to deliver. Let's see what they can do. I mean, no one expected them to win a playoff series last year, but they did. And now things are different.
Exactly. And they should be different, Dan, because the expectations are different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's fair to say, you know, for the foreseeable future, Dan, this should be a cap ceiling team. This is a team that needs to be going for it. They need to think more about what can we do to win today as opposed to what can we do in 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to start to see that when you start having decisions that Tom Fitzgerald's going to have to make during the season. You know, the big contracts for coming up for next season, or after this season, I should say, you know, are Dawson Mercer and Akira Schmid. Both those guys are in critical years, where with Mercer, I think it's safe to say he's a very good player. He's a top six quality player.
Yep.
So you should lock him up long term. You should learn the lessons from Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier and say, we're going to overpay you now in the hopes that you're going to end up being a bargain.
Yep, and it's worked out so far.
Yeah, it's worked out incredibly well. However, for Schmid, you know, that's an even, you know, the big question mark is going to be, can he handle being the total number two guy? He definitely outplayed Blackwood last year. He's mm-hmm. more than earned the opportunity thanks to his playoff heroics. But again, now that you're a cap ceiling team, you now have to start thinking about how much money is committed, because now all these contracts are on the books. whether, you know, you got Meyer, Hughes, Brat, Palat, Heischer, Hamilton, all making upwards of $6 million to the cap individually.
You'll have to think about Luke Hughes in the future, presumably, if he's as good as advertised.
Yeah, well, his ELC already started, so you got 2 years on cheap years of Luke Hughes before he's going to get a big payday, and that's going to kind of explain why Nemech may end up in Utica for another year, just to let that contract slide and give yourself a little flexibility. Mm-hmm. It's not great, because I think Nemech has the quality to make this team based on, you know, he was just head and shoulders above everybody on the Devils at the Prospect Challenge. He was just like, you know, this, just by purely watching him skate, you know, like, yeah, this guy's just better than everyone else on this team. Give him a chance in New Jersey. But unless he demonstrates he's just too good to send down again, the money suggests let him sit for a year so you get another cheap year out of him and, you know, give yourself room when Hamilton's contract can be moved, Palat's contract could possibly be moved, some other moves can happen, and the cap goes up. That's the other thing that has to happen. That gives you the flexibility you need for the future. But those are good problems to have. Dan.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it means your team is aiming for something, and you know, guys are earning big contracts means they're playing well enough to earn big money.
Smith still being signed and Miller signing kind of heralded this whole scenario as well. I think it's just hard to envision those moves being made if they really needed Nemech to step in for that final role. So I don't know. You're probably right.
Yeah, and again, if you look at the history of, you know, NHL teams, especially with the Devils, you know, you never just go through an entire season with 13 forwards and 7 defensemen. There's going to be trades. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be call-ups. You know, at some, you know, usually rule of thumb is that, yeah, 23 men are on an active roster, but most NHL teams are going to see 30 to 35 players play at least one NHL game for one reason or another. So if you don't make this roster after the next 2 weeks, like if you're Simon Nemech or you're Alexander Holtz or you're even Graham Clark or the myriad of, you know, minor pro tweener signings like Kyle Criscolo and Justin Dowling and Chris Tierney, you're going to get your chance if you play well and the opportunity arrives. You know, it's not that these 2 weeks are just your only chance to make this team and it'll never happen. It just means you might need to wait a little longer. And as we saw with Schmid last season, as we saw with Kevin Ball, as we saw with actually, those are the two main examples I was thinking of. So, yep. But the point is that those guys did not start and primarily play in New Jersey right away, or didn't stick in New Jersey right away. But ultimately, when the real game started, both those guys more than proved themselves. They earned regular spots on the roster and they were able to play in big games, big minutes against big teams like our hated rivals in Carolina in the postseason. You don't get those games if you weren't good enough.
Yeah, I mean, they've earned the, you know, the respect that they're getting at camp this year, the contract extension that Ball got, things like that. It's, you know, it makes sense. You could see exactly why they were okay with letting players like Severson and Graves go, knowing that that was their back end was, you know, it had people of that caliber. So
exactly. And Luke Hughes is really the big wild card here in this sense, because again, this guy played 24 minutes in game 5 against Carolina. You don't throw a 20-year-old right out of college into that type of situation and keep giving him shifts just because you figure, the season's over. No, you give it to him because he's good enough to play those types of minutes. And he's already being slotted next to John Marino in camp. And as much as I don't put a lot of stock into those types of scrimmages, Dan, because, you know, they're going to change. It's experimentation time. Yeah. But I think that's a logical pairing. You know, you have Marino with a very dynamic and still, to a degree, inexperienced Luke Hughes. Marino was statistically one of the best defensemen in the league last season. He handled playing next to Severson when he was up with him on shifts. He played well with other players like Orion Graves next to him. Putting Luke Hughes next to him gives that pairing a lot of extra offensive dynamic ability, such that, you know, Marino can effectively help cover for some of those issues Luke Hughes is going to work out with his growing pains and so forth. And if Luke Hughes is as good as advertised, as we saw in that postseason and in that last game against Washington at the end of the regular season, this defense is going to become a frightful thing for opponents to play against, because it's no longer just, oh, we'll just stop Dougie Hamilton and there goes all their offense. Like, oh, no, Luke Hughes, you got to worry about Luke. And we've seen this trend in the NHL, Dan. You know, Carolina paid big money to Dmitry Orlov to add to their blue line an offensive element.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Columbus Blue Jackets, in a search for relevancy, you know, did the big sign and trade for Damon Severson, and also got Ivan Provorov, and at around the same time, and hopes Zach Werenski comes back. So they're doing that. Our Stanley Cup champion Las Vegas Golden Knights had Shea Theodore and Alex Pietrangelo lead the way both ends of the rink. So if Luke Hughes hits this, the Devils are going to be among not only just following the trend, but it also just makes him a much more difficult team to play against. And that's why I think his ascent in preseason is going to be the one to watch for.
I mean, just look at our Norris Trophy winner. You know, he's playing, let's call it optional defense at times, but
yeah,
the value that he provides on offense is just so staggering that he outscores, what, like 99% of forwards in the league anyway? So yeah, who cares?
You can live with him missing a coverage here or there because you know he's going to make up for it.
Yeah.
The trick is going to be in Pittsburgh is, and again, that also follows the trend. It's Chris Letang and Erik Karlsson. But at the same time, those guys, Carlson's now 33 and he just had probably the best year in his career. And Letang is 36 coming off a stroke. I don't know how effective they're going to be as they would be on paper, but we'll see.
Of a Carlson is just awesome.
Yeah,
he's just awesome.
Yeah, but Pittsburgh is very much we're going for it, come hell or high water team. Might as well. Mm-hmm. It's all going to fall apart. You might as well try to go out with a bang.
Yeah. Have a couple last runs for Crosby and Malkin, and there you go, and Letang.
Yep. Now, while we're talking about things ending, I want to talk about something that's beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, women's professional hockey is trying to become a thing again, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
So the quick story, the TLDR is, once upon a time, there was a league in Canada. And then there was an American hockey league that offered to pay its players. And the Canadian league fell. But instead of having one league that the NHL would support, the former CWHL players decided to break away and start a union and basically try to undercut the NWHL as much as possible. And they ultimately succeeded, for the NWHL, that now then known as the PHF, got bought out.
Mm-hmm.
This may shock you, Dan, that the union players are now in charge and they forced all the PHF players to sign new contracts and give up their rights and all that. Well, they're starting again with six teams.
Mm-hmm.
They drafted teams, Dan. There's going to be a team in the New York metropolitan area. Dan, where does this team play?
I and they don't know.
What are they called?
I and they don't know.
Can we buy tickets?
You know what? I think I and they don't know just yet. Where are you buying tickets to?
That is a great question. But they have teams. They had a draft.
Well, good.
They had free agency. They have owners and coaches.
But this they already is my way, all this, that stuff.
This is my way of saying is that this is somewhat Devils related, because if this league does start to have ties back to the NHL, and there is some reason to believe this, like Brian Burke is the director of the players union for this league. I don't think it's an accident that these teams are representing areas that already have NHL teams. There's a number of connections in the men's game and the women's game, both at the management and the coaching levels. We've seen connections between the Devils and the Riveters before suddenly that magically went away around the same time the union formed, which is, I don't think, a coincidence.
Weird.
So we'll see if the NHL says, well, there's one league and we're favorable with this union. Jana Heffer gets to win once more. We'll see if the Devils get involved, or if our hated rivals get involved, or if somebody else gets involved, because without it, I don't know how this is going to work, since once again, Dan, we don't know what they're called. We can't mm-hmm. buy tickets right now. And, oh, I forgot to mention, Dan, they're going to run their season from January through June, but they're going to break for the World Championships, which are held in Utica this year.
Interesting.
And that's kind of what tells you all you need to know about women's hockey as of right now. The World Championships are being hosted in Utica.
I mean, I hope it works out. I really hope that this time they manage to make something sustainable, because it seemed like for the people who went to the games, it was a lot of fun, and they had a nice little infrastructure going there for a while, and then it all just kind of blew up. There are a lot of redundancies. A lot of people lost their jobs, like not to be lost in all this. There's a lot of teams that got folded because of this. So it's just sad to see that happen, but I hope they do the most with this opportunity.
Ultimately, you know, the complaint about women's sports is, it's got to be subsidized. It's got to be done this. Maybe so, but ultimately this goes back to something that I've noticed around the league is the importance of good ownership. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to have the money, but you also need to have you need to care whether that's you yourself doing it or you hire someone to do that for you because you own a whole bunch of sports teams. Like, say, I don't know, Josh Harris and David Blitzer, who just bought the Washington Commanders. Mm-hmm. You know, like, say what you want about, you know, them owning 10 or so different teams between the two of them, Dan, but they hire people who make sure that those teams get funded and get resources and succeed. And we can say that with the Devils. They're certainly not afraid to spend money. Just look at the Timo Meier contract or the Jesper right. Bratt contract, the Dougie Hamilton contract, or all these other contracts. So going back to the women's game there, you know, we've seen this in basketball and we've seen this in soccer, that the sports can absolutely function, but you need the ownership and you need people in charge that have a good, reasonable mindset for growth. And my fear is that the PWHL is going to follow the same path of the former two leagues and fail to achieve the opportunities that they do. Because I do think, because here in New Jersey, at least, Dan, there is a strong youth hockey culture here. We have a lot of youth teams here, and there's a lot of girls teams as well. You know, it would be cool if they actually had a league to aim for one day.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, that has yet to be viable. And I can't blame them.
Yeah. And it's sad because also Olympic hockey, the Women's Olympic Hockey Tournament is fantastic. Every single time it plays, the rivalries are great. There's great storylines. I mean, there's legends of hockey consistently competing on both these teams, and other teams are slowly, I mean, they're not really closing the gap just yet, but they're getting better as time goes on.
Amongst themselves, it's entertaining. Like, you don't want to watch Japan play Canada, but you want to watch Japan play Sweden.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a bad example. Maybe Russia, but whatever.
Either way, like, it's so much fun to watch every time. So it would be nice to just have another league. More hockey is always better. It's something where, you know, we should always be watching some form of our favorite sport, and why not?
Right. And to that end, Dan, there's already rumors.
Who?
Possibilities floated. Our man, Mr. Weeks, you might have heard mm-hmm. of him. He likes to pop up in random spots in northern New Jersey and announce that he's nearby a CVS or a Walgreens or his local pizza place in East Rutherford and announce some news. Well, he's been floating on X. You know, what if the NHL has a team in Atlanta? Yeah. And more recently, what if the NHL has a team in San Diego? And given that Weeks is an ESPN reporter, Dan, I have to think they're floating the idea of expansion already because of the recent news in Ottawa, going back to ownership. You know, Ottawa just got bought by Michael Andelauer. They officially approved it. He had the press conference and everything. And he bought them for just shy of $1 billion, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Ottawa. Ottawa is one of the smallest teams market-wise in the league. So if they sold for $1 billion, you got to think the Devils are worth at least $1 billion. You got to think a lot of teams in this league are worth $1 billion.
Yeah.
And to that end, the NHL build, you know, I think it was, I can't remember if it was from Bill Daly or if it was from a source close to the situation like Bill Daly, where the NHL they're not planning to do expansion, but they're open to hearing about it, but it's going to take $2 billion to get in. And the sad thing is
hear about it.
Well, I think the $2 billion may be like a way to like keep people away from like saying, look, we'll consider it if you're willing to pay heaven and earth for this, but mm-hmm. don't talk to us otherwise. But the sad thing is, or the great thing, depending on your perspective, is that there are people who are willing to spend $2 billion on an NHL team.
Yeah.
We certainly had no problems asking for $500 million to get Las Vegas and more than that to get Seattle. They found those people pretty quickly. And they've proven that they could be good owners because Seattle and Las Vegas in particular have been very good teams very, very quickly.
Yep. So Atlanta, again, they're in a situation where they've had two teams before and they've lost them both. So
right.
I don't know. Like,
yeah, that's going to be the The perception problem is real in Atlanta.
It's a hard sell. Yeah.
However, I can defend that for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, Atlanta's first foray into NHL hockey was putting together a mid-hockey team that always lost to New York in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
The owner ran out of money. Atlanta also got hit hard by the recessions of the 1970s. So the team packed up, moved to Calgary, and that's how you got the Flames. And then the Thrashers, they were originally owned by AOL Time Warner, but then the merger happened, and then that fell apart dramatically. And the ownership group that wanted to save the Atlanta Hawks of the NBA and wanted to own Phillips Arena, they had to accept the Thrashers. Like, the most of the ownership group didn't want them. And mm-hmm. the one guy who did, after a lawsuit within the group over a Joe Johnson trade, I believe it was, that guy, the one guy who is willing to fight for the Thrashers among the ownership group, he got thrown out of the group. So basically, the Thrashers were dead man, DOA, you know? And that's how you got the return to the Winnipeg Jets. So going to Atlanta makes sense because Atlanta is a big metropolis. It's growing. They're building this potential arena in the northern part of the city where there's a lot of affluent people. We've already seen success with the Braves and their move of the stadium. So if you have an owner that's willing to stick around and actually want to own an NHL team, it can absolutely work. But I can understand mm-hmm. the concern of, are you just going to move this team to Quebec in like 10 years?
I mean,
and yes, I'm going to pick Quebec as a fun
like, would that be the worst thing?
Well, it would be really bad for the NHL to move a team from a growing metropolis in the heart of the South, the growing South of America, and moving it to a city that barely has 1 million people in its metropolis and is already, pretty much Montreal Canadian fans already.
But a ravenous fan base, ravenous up there.
Well, unless they're all rich and ravenous, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But there's already, San Diego is an interesting idea because they actually have a long history of minor league hockey there with the Gulls. I know Houston is another name that has been brought up because that's another massive city where the NHL really hasn't been to.
Portland, maybe. Why not?
I would think Portland would make sense, but I suspect there's a reason why nobody has floated Portland as a possibility.
Maybe
it could just come down to a lack of interest. Same
Houston
with Seattle.
Makes sense, actually, but yeah, Seattle worked.
Seattle works, and I can already tell you that Portland and Seattle, in soccer at least, they brutally do not like each other. And well, great. I don't know, right? And I'm sure in basketball, the Trailblazers and the Supersonics, they were not friends either. So, I mean, if you're looking for a natural rivalry, you're also looking to have a natural expansion to a quote unquote West Coast city that's not in California, yeah, then Portland. But I suspect there's a reason why there's never been an owner willing to want an NHL team despite all the wealth.
Yeah, who knows? That could easily change.
Yeah,
Vegas went from a no sports city to a what, three sports city in the matter of 5 years.
This is very true. And it comes down to what I was just saying. You need somebody who's willing to throw up the money to do that. Mm-hmm. And this is, in a sense, going back to the Devils, is why we're in a sense blessed to have Josh Harris and David Blitzer as owners, because they're not just billionaires with lots of money to burn. They're really into sports, almost to the point where you wonder, Dave, do you just not want to see your family? And that's why you keep buying second tier division teams all over Europe. But no, it's seriously, like, they're into sports. They understand that you got to pay to play. You got to pay your owners. You got to pay your coaches. You got to pay your GMs and make sure that, it's a lot of plates to juggle, but you can hire people to juggle them plates. And for all intents and purposes, the Devils are, they're pretty well taken together plate, especially for one Lindy Ruffdan,
mm-hmm.
which is, I guess, the last bit of Devils related news to really discuss.
Yeah,
and apparently you want tell the people, Dan, tell the people.
Well, we all kind of knew that his contract was expiring. We had this whole Andrew Brunette is the heir apparent to this coaching thing, or just some coaching gig, which he got eventually in Nashville. But when the year expired, Tom Fitzgerald said Lindy Ruff will be returning as our coach, and everyone said, well, that's very interesting because he currently doesn't have a contract.
Yeah,
turns out he did have a contract, just an option on the previous contract. And currently they're working on a longer term deal with him. But it's all been very strange not to hear anything about that, but I don't think anyone in the organization is too worried about it.
No, not at all. And that makes sense. I think it'd be more of a scandal if they decided, we don't trust Lindy Ruff after the 52-game winning season. It's like,
yeah.
Huh? Why?
Yeah.
Like at this point, you're waiting
how
for
much
the
better
shoe to
can he
drop.
possibly do, you know? Like, there's nowhere to go but down from there, basically. I mean, they could win more games, but as far as a franchise, they literally just had their best season ever. How can you not? How can you not keep this man?
Only if there was a massive scandal or some sort of weird case of privacy invasion, like what Mike Babcock did in Columbus, that led to union claims. Apparently, what did him in, Dan, this actually came out fairly recently, was that he invited a player over for lunch, took his phone to look through his photos, and then sent the player away without the lunch. In other words, Dan, this whole beat, he got fired effectively for not giving this player a sandwich. Well, I'd like to think that if you just gave him his lunch, he would go, yeah, it was weird, I was put off by it, but he did feed me. If I say, come over, I want to talk to you something, I'll give you lunch, and then I don't give you lunch, you're going to be angry with me.
Yeah,
I denied you food, left. A meal.
Well, listen, that's Columbus's problem.
Right. But the point is that Ruff is not doing stuff like that. Or if he is, he's making sure that he's doing enough good by his players.
Who I will love say him, that, by the way.
Yeah. And how can you not after the 52-game winning season? A great way for you to fall in love with your coach is winning a whole lot of games.
It's great.
It's how John Tortorella keeps getting work. You know, hey,
he
we
wins.
Don't lose every game. Okay, yeah. Maybe he's right.
No, he does win. It's true.
He does win. But nevertheless, Ruff, the question is going to be, how long is this extension? I know that coaching contracts are always a bit of a blind spot because they're not capped. You know, you can pay your coaches whatever you want, however you want. You know, it's going to come down to how much I think Ruff wants to keep doing this. I think that's also the other factor here. I mean, I don't like to commit ageism here, but, you know, he's not a young man anymore, Dan. And it's not like he has anything really to prove in his career either. So it's going to come down to, I think, how much longer does Ruff want to do this? And, you know, whether or not Ruff continues the expectations being met. To your point, Dan, I don't think this team's going to win 52 games next season. And that's not to say that they're going to win 53. But I think the expectation is go to the playoffs, win a couple playoff rounds, try to get to the cup. I think that's the expectation. And if Ruff beats it, cool. Keep him. If he can't, or if he struggles, or you think some other coach is available that can do that, then you got to let him go. I mean, that sounds harsh, but that's the business.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's all to be seen. If they follow up this campaign with another successful one, you know, just let him keep trying until it works.
Absolutely. And again, he's at least earned that after. Compare this to last year, where you and I think we're basically saying, yeah, Ruff is going to get fired if this team goes off to a bad start. And, you know, the people who matter were chanting as such infamously after a terrible first two games of the season before, you know, the rest of it where everybody apologized. Appropriately so.
Awesome. But that's 50. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's life. You know, if you win, people will love you. If you don't win, they won't. It's not rocket science, but it's very fickle.
All right, so anything else to cover in this episode?
I think the only other thing I would like to bring up is that I would definitely pay attention for the upcoming preseason games to see who actually just gets into the lineup. Because again, there's 43 players, there's 57 total players in this camp, Dan, and a number of these players are AHL only signed players. So I don't know if they can actually play in the preseason games. Like, for all I know, they're here for scrimmages. But if they can, I would be very curious to see if any of them get in, because you can almost guarantee that maybe the team is going to look at this guy as a future NHL player, or they're going to see this player as saying, all right, this guy's going to be a big deal in Utica, because this camp isn't just for determining the Devils roster. A lot of this camp is also going to determine Utica's and also Adirondacks. So I think the best way to look at these upcoming seven games is who's in the lineup, who's playing with who, and how are they doing? Because that's going to help determine who makes each roster. And, you know, if you're a Tyce Thompson, if you're a Brian Halonen, if you're a Michael Vukajevic, if you're a Tobias Vilén or a Daniel Masuol, That's going to be what you're aiming for this year. It's not going to be try your best to get an NHL job. It's going to be establish yourself in the pecking order so you don't end up getting 10 minutes a night in Utica or getting games in Adirondack because you're just a healthy scratch with the Comets.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, we can kind of see the Utica lineup as it's going to be forming as well. But it's nice that some of those deeper round picks like Philman, for example, are overperforming for their draft positioning.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has to go back to junior because he's 19. I always forget this, so I'm trying to remember it now. Chase Stillman is 20. He'll be in Utica.
Okay.
But Philman will go, unless he's super good, he's probably going to go back to the WHL, unless they make a Shane Wright exception for him. And spoiler alert, Dan, they're not going to make a Shane Wright exception for him for Josh Philman.
Yeah, well, still.
There may not even be a Shane Wright exception, actually, now that I think about it. It's been something that Seattle's been floating over, like, oh, maybe we can let him play in the A. And I'm thinking, I don't think that's how the contract works, my dude. I don't think you can just say, oh, we'll make an exception for him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, again, like, if he's going to be wherever he is, I hope he's succeeding spectacularly like he was last year. He seemed to do pretty well at the rookie showcase, too.
Yeah, he was given, I mean, yeah, he was on the top line with Clark, and he scored a couple goals. I would definitely say Philman was goodish. I mean, some of the play from the prospect challenge wasn't very good, but it was a team of minor league players and prospects who've only had like two practices together, and it showed on the ice. Like, you know, it is what it is. You just hope to get out there, make some plays, don't get hurt. Get prepared for the proper season. That's all.
Yeah, nobody get hurt, please. And we'll be back with more coverage of the preseason as it rolls along. We're happy to be back with you on this upcoming Devils season. So as always, thank you all for listening. And you already know, let's go Devils.
Go Devils.